Live and local on AM 770 KTTH. Your independent conservative host, Todd Herman, welcomes you to The Todd Herman Show.
Today is the day the Lord has made, and I am thankful and glad within it. And of course, these are the times God has decided we will live through. You could say, depending on your mood, God has a sense of humor, or you could say, hey, take the cup from me, but these are the times we're living in. And I think one of our responsibilities, because we have such unique responsibilities in these times, is to remember this. We don't have that unique responsibility. I mean, in the United States, this is a unique responsibility. We're facing an onslaught of communism. Before he passed, God rest him, Rush Limbaugh said, we're in a death struggle with communism. And it's one of the last things that he wanted us to know, and he wanted to cement that in our knowledge base. And I truly believe that's one of the reasons that Rush worked so hard to live as long as he did. Not only did he love life, not only was he the optimist of all optimists, but he also was so deeply committed to doing everything he possibly could to elucidate what's going on. So I think we have a responsibility to think very hard about a guy like that passing on this message to us. The other thing that I think we have to do is to recognize areas in which we must retreat. That's a hard conversation, but there are areas in which we must retreat. We also need to recognize a mismatch in being on defense against a revolution and being on the side of revolution. And this is why I talk about us as being counter-revolutionaries, is because it is one thing to fight a revolution because it's forward progress and we have this to win and we can see these successes. And that's how people who foster revolution, they keep saying we take this hill and then we have this progress and we seize this institution and look at the changes and the victories we're having. When you play simple defense, really all you're doing is trying to present loss. So there's really no victory. There's no chance of victory when you're simply playing defense. A victory is you didn't lose or you tied. Now, there are times to play defense. This is not one of those times. Nor am I going to say, hey, it's time to go water the tree of liberty today. That's not what I'm going to say. I want to start with this mismatch. The left is marching towards destroying the United States of America. They'll keep the name. Everybody loves the name. There's all the logos and the jerseys, and they want the pretense of America. They simply don't want the ideals. They simply do not want freedom as it stands. They don't want freedom of movement. They certainly don't want freedom of thought. They don't want freedom of expression, unless it's sexual expression for kindergarten kids. And there's a reason for that. They'll trade. And what their psychology is they'll say, oh, sure. If you want to take drugs that make you feel good, sure. We're the party of that. If you want to have in the seventh grade sex in every which way you possibly can with whomever you want at any one time, even adults, yeah, that's good. That's fine. Go do that. They want to take base human desires and they want to play on them. We're the ones who say yes to cake. We're the ones who say, yes, we'll force people to call you a fake pronoun. We'll force them to do that. And it's always around base desires. Oh, you want revenge on this race of society? You want to be able to riot and burn cities down? Okay, yeah, that's good. Go ahead. Just vote for us. Just serve our needs. Just vote for us. Just be part of our intersectional group of allies, and we'll let you do that. And on the corporate side, oh, you want to purchase the bodies of little kids, big pharma? Go ahead. We'll sell it to you. You want to purchase Americans' retirement accounts? We'll sell it to you. You want to purchase the suburbs, the rural areas of the country and rush in your little cookie cutter apartment buildings? Go ahead. You do that. And then we'll fill that with voters who vote for tyranny. There's this mismatch. They're all about these things, and they're all powered by needs and feelings and desires. Not even really needs. It's not even really needs. It's desires. It's id, ego-based desires. It's libido-based desires. It's greed-based desires. It's avarice-based desires. If you're to go down the list of the Ten Commandments, well, it's sort of the anti-Ten Commandments that they're selling. And they're using this to merchandise. And when it's not, well, for instance, they're selling hate. It's not love thy neighbor, it's hate thy neighbor because your neighbor doesn't look like you. That's what they're merchandising with critical race theory. This, everything they do, nearly everything the left does is an inverse version of Christianity, frankly. It's also an inverse version of America. You have the right to pursue life, liberty, and happiness. They invert that. You have the right to vote for government to steal it for you. You don't need to pursue it. You just need to vote. Or let us steal votes, and we'll go steal material things for you. But it's not life. They're not stealing life and giving it to people. They're not giving people liberty. They're not giving people happiness. They're giving people the facsimile thereof. It's like a series of one-night stands might feel physically great. And for a little while, it certainly helps your id, ego. Oh, look at all the men or the women I'm sleeping with. Look at all the people I've seduced. Look at all the people who think I'm hot. It might feel good for a little while until the STDs roll around or until you realize I'm empty. None of these people care about me. You know, here I am stuck with my dinner at home. Person I'm supposed to date didn't come over. Probably because there was someone else. I've got these STDs. I've got no family. I've got no real friends because it's all based on my hotness. It's the fast food of psychology. But that's what the left is selling, immediate gratification. We have a mismatch. They use the id, ego, the libido, the libidinous needs, the greed, the avarice, the need for revenge, the inverse of virtuous emotions. I guess emotions aren't truly virtuous, but virtuous pursuits. Of emotions that can lead to virtue, like love, like honesty, like being vulnerable, like being committed. The left sells the opposite of these because they're faster. It's a sugar hit. It's a meth snort. It's cocaine up the nose versus a lifetime of gym memberships or jogging or lifting or yoga or meditation that takes so long. There's the mismatch, guys. They sell sugar rushes. Cocaine hits, both real and virtual. They sell to little kids the myth that orgies are the way to happiness. They do. It's in their curriculum. I don't want to use rough language like this. I didn't get into radio to use language like this. The mismatch is, here's our dear, sweet, shiny-shoed Republicans. Nine-tenths of them are scared to death to say anything I just said. Everything I just said, I'll back up. 90% of Republicans are scared to death to say what I just said. But am I wrong? Is this not what they're selling? And Republicans put us in this defensive position where we're so excited we get these scraps. Wow, did you see Ted Cruz made this video at the southern border where he saw the coyotes yell at him? I saw that. It was a great video. I loved when Ted Cruz stood up to the mass shaming. I loved when Rand Paul called out this man, Dr. Rachel Levin, who's now basically in charge of the health care and wants to drive wrong sex hormones into street kids. I love that, but they're minor victories. They're rhetorical victories. They're rhetorical sugar rushes. Wow, that was a great viral video Ted Cruz put out. Man, Rand Paul really went after this man, Dr. Rachel Levin. The sugar rushes. When we come back from traffic, I want to take a look at things that are not sugar rushes. I want to look at some areas where we must retreat and some areas on which we can and must go on offense. If we want any chance of this country not being rolled over by this weird China model of corporate authoritarianism, We'll get into that right after we check traffic, right-way traffic. In any war, and right now, thank God Almighty, we're not really in a shooting war in the United States. There's been hot pockets. There's been conventional warfare in the streets. Louisville was conventional warfare in the streets. Only the patience of the feds in Portland have stopped that from becoming conventional warfare in the streets. There's, of course, the recent, we talked about that earlier in the show, and I want to get back into that. I want to stay focused on these arenas. Take your kids out of the government schools. If you live in even a purple state, your children's minds are not safe in government schools. The government schools are lost. Remove your children. We'll try to win them back. But unless you want your kids inculcated to not know whether you or the authorities are telling the truth about race, about sex, about gender, about what actual equality means, not this twisting equity. If you want your kids to have any shot and any kind of mental equilibrium, you have to take them out of the government schools. If you're in a communist state like Seattle, city state, get them out. You cannot have them in there. If you're in a purple state or a purple city like Spokane, Washington, get them out. They are not safe in a government school. Austin, San Francisco, Houston, New York, Chicago, Indianapolis. These are areas from which we must retreat for this generation because the schools are indoctrination centers. Churches, homeschool co-ops, homeschool groups, private schools that still teach the truth about America, that still teach the truth about biology. Get your kids in there. There's nothing easy about a counter-revolution, particularly when we've waited so long to go on defense that we're now looking at areas of retreat. But these are things that must be done. Otherwise, your kids will come out confused about sexuality, the sex act, gender, biology, race, the meaning of freedom, the history of the United States, their own identities. The schools are designed to erase, not all the schools, critical race theory and comprehensive sex education. These things are designed to erase individuality, which erases individual thought. You can't have freedom without individual thought. Freedom is a result of the negotiation between people to get some things some people like, some things they don't. Get your kids out of the school, they're done. In purple states or in communist areas like Seattle, it's a communist area. In colleges, you cannot write checks for your older kids, your adult children, to be in these indoctrination centers. You must tell them, if you choose to do that, you will write the check. These institutions are not our friends. They are lost. We must retreat from them. We must retreat from having the Hollywood constantly in our house and HBO always on. I know that hurts, but we have to do these things. See, retreat hurts. But we've not gone on offense. Offense. Here's the model I want to see. In states that are conservative, let's take Texas. I want to see Ted Cruz aligned with Governor Abbott. I want to start to see actual press conferences and, better yet, direct-to-the-people web conferences and town hall meetings with Ted Cruz and Governor Abbott and the conservative leaders of Texas. And I want them to go on offense. Number one, we're not going to take in what Biden calls undocumented immigrants. We're not going to take in illegal immigrants. We are not going to provide you the ability to install people in our state who you intend to turn in to voters with something they owe to the party. We're not doing it. We'll fight you tooth and nail. Announce it. We're not doing it. We won't use our funding for that. We won't use our schools for that. Is it cruel? No. to sink the world's lifeboat is cruel. The United States has been the world's lifeboat. Number two, Joe Biden's dementia fully intends to con out of existence rural living. They intend to use this fake infrastructure bill, 96, 94% of it, which has nothing to do with infrastructure. They intend to set up these grants to con states with their own money and money borrowed from China. Hey, here's some grants. All you need to do is let the federal government take over the zoning of properties in Texas, in Idaho, in Nevada, in Oklahoma. All the states will be zoned from Washington, D.C. with two outcomes they seek. One is to destroy rural living by bringing in people who will vote against rural living. Number two is to make rural living so expensive by limiting roads and access and taxing it into high heaven so that you're blackmailed to move back into their city states. It's the published plan. This imaginary partnership I'm setting up. Just imagine Ted Cruz and Greg Abbott doing a conference like this. Just imagine, what's his name, Little in Idaho, with the conservative senators in Idaho giving a press conference. Or better yet, a town hall. Then maybe it's an alliance of red states. Maybe it's the Red State Alliance. I'd call it America. I'd take the conservative states and call it America. And say, these are the conferences. We're not taking in your illegal immigrants. We're not. You want to take federal money from us? Fine. We won't let the feds operate in our states. Sounds like civil war, except it's not. It's civil. It's discourse. And since the communist states, like Seattle and Portland, which are city states, can get away with saying, oh, we'll let illegal immigrants stay. Well, certainly we can get away with saying, no, we won't let them come in. If one thing's true and defensible, the equal and opposite is. Gun laws, we're not having it. The Conservative States Alliance or the American States Alliance, we're looking at the Second Amendment. Your desire to steal the guns of law-abiding citizens in their gun safes, rather than go after the criminal gangs that you could easily do with RICO statutes, that's null and void. It's abhorrent to the Constitution. We're not enforcing it. We won't allow it to be enforced in our states. Remember, the separate countries of California, Oregon, and Washington won't let federal immigration authorities operate in there. They have drug laws that stand in defiance of federal law. Remember all these things. Remember, they wouldn't follow Trump administration orders. That's offense. We need to go on offense. I want to see the conservative senators from Oklahoma with the conservative governors from Oklahoma. I want to see the conservative senators from Arizona and Texas and Idaho, and to the degree that they still exist in Montana and South Dakota. Governors and senators aligned in town hall meetings in a block saying to D.C., we, whatever we are, 25 states. It's the American States Alliance, and the answer is no. We will not have critical race theory in our schools. You want to fight us for federal monies? Great. You know what? We'll fight you on your federal lands. Not with weapons, with lawfare. We'll go ahead and get rid of any local roads that head to your federal property. How do you like us now? The mismatch is part psychological. It's easier to be on the side of revolution because you see a hill to gain. See that hill up there, guys? Once we take that, we'll have the schools, we'll have the media, we'll have education, we'll own the public health authorities. We've been sitting back and saying, if we just hold static, we won't lose that much. They're going to hit us in the face, they're going to hit us in the groin, but man, we're going to stand still. We won't win anything, but we won't lose that much. Those days need to be over. We need to be an offense. And I've described ways to do this rhetorically, civilly, legally, through governance. And if any conservative senators and governors care about ever having America as anything other than a vague memory, they're going to follow suit on this or find their own way to go on some form of offense like I've described. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show with your text messages at 800-465-8770. Let's check traffic with Right Way Traffic.
It's your turn to text the Todd Herman Show.
The rule's pretty simple.
Be concise, be precise. And drop the mic. 800-465-8770.
Please, please, big voice. We didn't tell him. It's not the big voice's fault. Just give yourself a nickname. Please, the first time you write in. I promised you I was going to stop bugging you about that. I just don't like calling people numbers. I feel like a prison guard. Yeah, 206. Yep. Water boss, nice to say that. Oh, that used to drive my... When I worked in construction... yeah, it's text messages and emails to me, and I'm going to pop off into a story. When I worked in construction, I worked with a guy who had been in prison, but he was in prison in... it was either Oklahoma or Texas. So he actually had the Paul Newman... what was that movie he was in where he ate all the eggs? Cool Hand Luke. He didn't eat eggs. He wasn't Paul Newman, but he had the experience of having the bosses on horses. And he used to say when he first got to the construction site, he was a really good guy, by the way. He had a family and had super straightened his life out and was proud. He had two ski boats and he was a cool guy. He drove a big, you know, work truck, and he did the wiring, and he did the inspection of the wiring before the inspectors came. So he was a super smart guy. But when he was working, he still had this habit of putting his hand up and saying to the supervisor, "Hey, water boss." And I had to ask, "What's that mean?" He goes, "Oh, God, he hates it when I do this, but when I was in prison, what you had to do to get the riding horse's attention or the riding boss's attention is you would put your hand up, and sometimes they'd pretend not to see you or they wouldn't see you, so you'd kind of put your hand up and wave it, and that's what they'd do. They'd use your prison number. 1481, what? Water boss? Step to it, and you'd run and get your water, and you'd come back. And so it had just grown into the way he spoke. He would call people boss. He called me boss. I was far younger than him. I dug holes. But man, when the supervisor did this, and I remember the supervisor's, I don't remember his name. I remember his nickname. His nickname was Space. I don't remember his real name. But Space, he was a general contractor, a very smart guy, very successful guy. And he'd, you know, hear water boss, "Don't say that. Don't call me boss." All right, to the emails. "Dear Todd, you talk a lot about your time in politics, but you've also done some things like worked at Microsoft. And then I hear you say you worked in Hollywood. I would love to hear your impressions of that because both of my kids really want to be actors and actresses. So I'd love to hear some stories about that. They both listen to the show. They're 14 and 17, boy and girl, respectively. Much love, Denise in Richland." Richland, Washington, by the way. Okay. All right, so I just told the water boss, the water boss story. I worked in Hollywood, but I worked there with Microsoft's money. And there's a huge difference. Because when you have Microsoft's money, everyone acts like you're really interesting and really, really visionary. So I got conned. You know, here was what my job in Microsoft was. I was sort of the exchange student between media, because I worked in radio, and then I had an internet radio company. So in that way, I learned tech, and I learned to talk tech, and I understood some things about code, and I understood some basics about the technology business and where it might be headed. And Microsoft obviously understood code, but they still to this day have no idea about consumers, unless it's video games, and they bought all that. They don't get consumers in any other way. In fact, they don't like consumers. But they certainly didn't get the media business. So my job was to go down and teach them about the media business or go represent them in media circles. And when you have the world's biggest software company and they all want to play in media, There's so many of them who just go down and dump money on the tables of the studios and the talent agencies. And when I would go down and say, wait, how are we making money on this? I mean, there's responses from media people like, finally, there's a guy from Microsoft who cares about making a dime. Hey, what do we need to do? But listen, let me tell you something. To your kids, Denise, the filth you hear about Hollywood is 100% true. It's 1,000 times worse. Number one, there are a lot of really cool people who work there. That's a fact. There are some people who are moral people. I don't know how they do it. They keep themselves together. That's a fact as well. There's some really smart people. That's a fact. But overall, there is a tinge of scum to Hollywood. Let me give you an example. Let me give you a couple of examples. I was speaking at an event called Digital Hollywood. So this was what it sounds like. It was the digital business crossed with the tech business. And since I had Microsoft's money behind me, and I had a pretty cool looking leather sport coat, I was trying so hard to be the visionary with my leather sport coat, and everybody knew who I was, and I thought it was because I was smart, and it wasn't. It was because I had Microsoft's money. So I'd go on these panels, and I'd be glib. I'd do my best job to share what I thought was going to happen, and then inevitably, since I had Microsoft's money and a Microsoft business card, I'd have like 200 people lined up to see. It's not quite that many. I'd have like 40 people lined up to see me after the speech. Everybody had their little, you know, their elevator pitch. I shouldn't say little. They're business people trying to make something happen. I met some really good people out of that. I met a woman named Eden Clark. She had a business called B. Jane. It should have made it. She's smart, very moral, very pretty woman, but never played on that. But in the other side of the event, we get done with this, and this woman walked up to me. And she had everything, I don't know if it was surgically altered or what. I just know that this is a woman whose life depends on how she looks. I hate being manipulated, particularly sexually manipulated. I hate it. I hate it. I don't like being driven to base instincts. I don't like being thought of as a machine you can turn off or on. In any case, she walks up. I'm polite. I'm trying not to use this as a judgment. Perhaps this is just the way she presents herself. She hands me a business card with both hands, puts another hand on top of my hand, squeezes my hand, pulls my hand in towards her stomach. And she says, Todd, my partners and I are former Playboy playmates, and we will do anything for a deal with Microsoft. And Todd, I mean anything. And I'm like, here's how like the small town I was like, ah! pulled my hand away with like a ah! Like, what? I didn't say what, but okay. It couldn't have been less cool. And I don't care because I'm like, wait, am I reading this the right way? That's one example. Here's another one. This one just, it just, this is everything Hollywood. This is everything Hollywood. Well, I mean, there's the time where I was in a room and everybody was snorting cocaine. There's that, including Microsoft people. Everybody was snorting cocaine. There's that. I could do an hour on this. Let me just try to cement it this way. It was Hollywood Hills. We were in the Hollywood Hills. I don't even know if I should tell. Yeah, okay. No, wait, you know what? Let me tell you this way. I was at a talent agency. It's called CAA. So Creative Artists Agency. It's the biggest talent agency on earth. And it has these incredible new offices. And I was there to see their creative director, a guy named Jay. Really cool guy, by the way. I mean, obviously very creative. And I'm in the lobby waiting for Jay. And there's sitting across from me a dude. I can tell he's a screenwriter because he's got piles of paper and he's not good looking. So he can tell I'm tech. I've got a leather, sport coat. I'm not good looking. and I'm dressed like, okay, I want to be a playa. He's got the messed up hair and the big stack of papers. I can tell he's a screenwriter. So we've got both each other made. And we're sitting in this lobby. I forget the name of the street, but it's one of the main streets in L.A. It's these huge gray buildings with everything's marble. Everyone in it is good looking. There's not a person in there who doesn't belong in the movies. And these are just the people like bringing you coffee and checking you in. And then sitting next to him on this leather couch is this girl, maybe 17, utterly, utterly gorgeous. Small town, blonde hair, utterly gorgeous girl. She's a kid. She's a girl. She keeps looking at her watch. She keeps looking at her watch. Look, this, she had a watch on, it occurred to me. Finally, she looks to me. I swear to you, she had a Southern accent. I swear she did. She says, pardon me, sir. Do you have the time? And I looked at my watch and I said, yes, it's 10:15. Oh. I said, was your appointment for 10 a.m.? Yes, sir. Is this your first time here? Yes, sir. They'll be out at about 10:30. Really? Yes, they will. 10:30 rolls around. And here comes a young woman, 2 years older than this girl, who's more made up, has been through more exercise classes, has spent more money on shoes, has more Prada, more makeup, more professional looking, probably more plastic surgery. She comes out, says the girl's name, are you Kristen? And this girl looks up and says, yes, come with me. She gets up her stuff and she walks away. She says, thank you, sir. She walks away. Click, click, click. And I look at the screenwriter. He looks at me and he says, you won't recognize that one in 6 months. I said, do you think it'll take that long? He goes, you ever see the movie The Wall? I said, yeah. He goes, yeah, it's the kids in the sausage machine. You won't recognize that one. So, yeah, I spent some time in Hollywood. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show and wrap up the day with a personal note on the Todd Herman Show.
Down on Main Street.
On a personal note, today I will be your guide host this week on the EIB Network. That's coming up just around the corner, and it will always be an honor to do that. And just like I say, if you get through on the phones when I'm on EIB, please let me know that you listen to the program either live or podcast or stream, whatever. Don't make a big deal about it because it's Rush's show. But I like to know when I'm chatting with someone I haven't had an opportunity to meet yet who listens to the show. So now, on a personal note today, I have noticed something that is driving me nuts. It's about aging. And I grew up racing race cars. I started to race quarter midgets when I was 7 years old and raced quarter midgets for a couple of years and graduated up into we ran methanol. I can't remember the classes of the cars, but it eventually made it up into what you would call a half midget. And then open-wheeled stock cars. I started to race open-wheeled stock cars when I was, I didn't have a driver's license. So it's 15 when I started to race open-wheeled stock cars against grown men. So I prided myself on the fact that I could drive half an inch from your bumper at a really accelerated speed over, 100 miles, 130 miles an hour, and be perfectly fine with that and not hit you. And I could have the eyesight so that I could get inches from you in, open wheeled competition and pass between you and another car and know I could fit in this slot. And it was, I used to say, how is it that people can't see this? And my depth perception is just dying. It really is. I don't have it anymore. I went the other day and part of it is I drive a big truck and that changes the way you see things, but that's not it. I'm old. I pulled into a parking lot the other day and just popped into our local little, some people call it a convenience store. In Idaho, we call them markets. And so I pulled into my little market and I forgot something. And so I went back to the truck. I looked like, man, I'm 6 feet away from where the front of the truck's supposed to be. I had to get back in and park my truck again. I had to get in and pull forward and got out. I still wasn't right. I was like a foot away from where the front of the truck should be. And this isn't an ADD thing. You know, this is bad parking. And I used to joke with my friends, man, if I ever drive like that, just put a bullet in me. So now I'm saying, wait a couple years. I'll live with this. And there's something else that's going on with my age. Now, this isn't really age as much as it is a period in life where I had to be hypervigilant. Well, that's where I was. I was hypervigilant. I was in a flight or fight mode for way too long. The consequence of that is that it seems my body no longer makes adrenaline. Now, that could be dangerous if, like, I'm in an emergency circumstance and I need the adrenaline, but I've always been pretty good at being calm in emergencies, and it could be dangerous if I needed to, you know, try to defend myself or my family physically, and I can still get angry. So I can still bring the anger in a circumstance like that. And adrenaline isn't really that helpful in those circumstances. I mean, yeah, life-saving if you need extra strength. Where I miss it's in the gym because they don't have fourth gear anymore. I loved fourth gear. So when my endocrine system is a little shot, it takes a long time now for me to warm up into a workout. And if you work out a lot or you work out seriously, you know what I'm talking about, where your body just no longer feels any pain and you just go and flow. So those two things appear to be gone in my life. And wouldn't you know it, that God has a reason for this? I think the reason for the adrenaline and the removal of the adrenaline, even if it's temporary, is when you are a parent of a teen and that teen has had challenges. And my daughter is a great kid. And we've done really good work as a family. I'm very proud of the work we've done together. I'm really proud of the work that she does. So I'm not criticizing. But I'm saying that there do come times where it could get very scary, very emotional, but not anymore. I am able to face challenges that come up completely calmly. I don't have a head of steam. I don't have any panic mechanisms. I don't have any overreaction mechanisms. One of the problems I had as a parent was that when I felt my daughter wasn't doing well or was having challenges, I dove in instead of saying, how are you going to handle this? I dove in. I never was aware of it. I now know that it created some serious challenges for her. I'm now very able, because my adrenaline's gone, to look at a situation that for a lot of people would just frighten the heck out of them and say, this is pretty serious. How are you going to handle it? And as I've noticed that my depth perception has gone away, I believe that God is replacing it with the perception of depth. And I know it's not exactly the same thing. One is eyesight. One is perception. I am so thankful for the perception of depth. I'm a member of a prayer group. And in this prayer group, we have a wild array of personalities and a wild array of styles of prayer. There's some people in our group who have such beautiful, eloquent ways of praying. And they draw scripture into it, and they've got memories for scripture. And I sit amazed at how they can memorize scripture and bring that to bear in our prayers. And there's people in our group who have people's names, you know, memorized in the church. And this person needs that, and this person needs this. And there's a lovely woman in our group, and she cries when she prays. And she jokes about being someone who cries when she prays. And I just love it. I love to see the tears, because I see them as sincerity. There's a gentleman in our group whose prayers are never more than 10 words long. But when I listen to them, I recognize the depth in the prayers that he offers. The simplicity is on the front. The depth is the life experience. There's a saying that the Bible is a book that is so shallow, kids can wade in it without danger. And it's so deep that the world's greatest scholars can study it for a lifetime and never fully understand it and still be learning from it. And every time this gentleman prays, I can feel the depth that he has in his life. Depth of experience. As Rush would say, wisdom guided by experience. I'm able to see people in my life, for instance, people who work with folks who are recovering alcoholics and drug addicts, and many of them getting out of prison. And I'm able to see a serenity. Is a gentleman who works in a ministry that does this, and his serenity is supreme. And he's been through the ringer in life. And he still wears his scars. And everybody can see them. But I can see, as I talk about, well, what about this person? And how can we help this person take the next step? And I can see this gentleman, his serenity. Sometimes people need to really understand what bottom is. So I might not be able to park my truck. I won't run over you because it won't get within 30 feet of you. Depth perception is that bad. And I might not be able to jump straight up out of my rocking chair. If there's a fire, I'll get there. But man, the things it's replaced is the ability to let my daughter breathe emotionally. And the ability to see the depth in a person that I don't spend a lot of time with and just get to listen to when they're praying in our little group. It's a good trade. Don't like to be able to race cars, but it's a good trade. This is the Todd Herman Show. We air every weekday, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. We're on podcasts everywhere. Please share it with your friends. Now, go be well, be strong, and be kind.